Hey, listeners, did you know that Yogi Triathlete offers endurance coaching for body and mind? We offer personalized training plans for endurance sports, wellness and mindset, nutrition and recovery guidance, and race preparation and strategy, all within the supportive community of Team Yogi Triathlete. So if you're ready to conquer your fitness goals and push your limits, our endurance coaches are ready to guide you on the journey to peak performance. Go to yogitriathlete.com today to set up your free 30-minute discovery call and embrace a future of strength, stamina, and achievement. Your goals, our experience, the perfect match for unstoppable success.
What does happiness feel like?
What does happiness feel like? I find happiness in the pursuit of a pursuit of something bigger than yourself. And that is something that me and my wife are both doing. And we find that in the trails, in the community there, I know that's not a definition, but purely what we're finding in it. I don't know if I can give you a straight up definition besides whatever I'm doing right now.
Welcome to the Yogi Triathlete Podcast. We are Jess and BJ, and we're thrilled to welcome professional triathlete turned professional trail runner Eli Hemming to the show. We followed Eli's career through his Olympic distance draft legal racing on the world stage. And despite being ranked number one in the U.S. because of his multiple World Cup podiums, Eli's happiness factor was falling within the sport of triathlon, and he could no longer ignore that it was time for a radical change. So in May of 2021, he officially retired and hit the trail running scene, where he found immediate success qualifying for the 2022 Mountain Running Championships. And this is also the year that he crossed over from sub-ultra to ultra-distance racing with a second at the Way Too Cool Ultra Trail Run. He finished that year with several podiums, but did not claim victory at a race until 2023, which was a year of continued improvements and highlights, like placing second at the Marathon de Mont Blanc. And since the calendar turned over to 2024, he's been on a winning streak. It's almost as if the trails had been patiently awaiting his arrival. We are catching up with Eli less than a week after he took the win at the Big Alta 50K, over 20 minutes over second place in a cool 3:38:33, an incredible feat considering the elevation of that race. And also that this race came on the heels of crushing his competition at the Black Canyon 60K just 2 weeks prior, where he broke the tape by 30 minutes over second place in 4:06:39. We're excited to be catching him after these two victories and seeing how the momentum is feeding him and what he's been learning along the way since he tossed his swim goggles aside and racked his bike. Eli Hemming, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys so much for having me. That was quite the intro.
So Jess mentioned the Big Alta and the Black Canyon Ultras, which is what we were watching, the longer race. And then we kind of snuck into the 60K and saw that you were just crushing that as well. 2024 is is off to a pretty good start. How do you, like, what is the feeling? Can you describe the feeling pushing beyond the second places and into first place now, 2 weeks apart at two different races? How does that feel?
Oh, I mean, it feels amazing. I can never be upset with winning some races. The biggest thing, I think, is kind of the progression over the last couple of years is I'm actually learning how to run trail races. I came into the sport, obviously, triathlon. I had such a huge aerobic base. My fitness was probably higher than average people. But I did not have the skill to back it up. So I was, fudging my way through trail races. And so this last year I was learning how to run trails. So I think now I'm trying to be fit and be technically there.
That's the same thing. We had Heather Jackson on the podcast quite a while ago, both when she was a triathlete and now when she's a trail runner. And that was the very exact same thing. Like, you've got this fitness, but it's like that skill level, that ability to jump and skip and be able to not fall down, which comes from practice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I spent a lot of time with some very bloody hands and knees this last couple of years.
Now, I know that you started your triathlon career, your sports career, at a very young age when your mom started a triathlon team, and you were on it. I think you were 7 years old. Now, was running something that always kind of had your heart, or was it something you really had to work at, and now you feel like maybe it's just being celebrated through all of the hard work, or a little bit of both?
I'd say a little bit of both. I definitely always loved running. I would say running didn't always love me. I would say I was actually a much better cyclist than runner for a very good amount of time. But running, the simplicity that came with running, I'd really found a love for. And when I was really starting to train more in triathlon mostly, I found that the first thing I would go to is I'd just grab a pair of shoes instead of having to worry about getting my bike all ready, everything that goes along with that. It was just the simplicity that really drew me.
And I was listening to a bit of the live feed. I wasn't listening to it live. I was actually listening to it yesterday. And Corinne Malcolm was on the mic doing the commentating for the Big Alta this weekend. And they're kind of chatting or whatever. And they were like, oh my God, we've got Eli on the tarmac. Like he's here. And they were like, Corinne Malcolm actually described your pace in your running. She's like, that's just disgusting. And she's like, I mean that in the best way possible. She just kept saying, she's like, that is just a disgusting pace. And when we look at, what was the term with it? The adjusted.
Oh, grade adjusted.
The pace. Grade adjusted, yeah. Pace. They were estimating that it was sub 6 minute miles on a grade adjusted pace on this 50K with almost 8,000 feet of climbing, you know, and I'm sure you know trail running well enough to know that it's never the exact amount of elevation. It's never the exact amount of mileage. But one of the things that she said was, she said, you know, I've kind of gotten to know him a little bit. And she said, he's just calm. He's cool. He's collected. He's all smiles. And it seems like this is this happiness piece that was lacking in triathlon. And so to kind of go back to triathlon and this jump now in your career, because on paper, everything was looking really good. By all means, you should have stayed with it, right? Should have, in quotes. But when was the first time you can kind of remember that, just that happiness, the joy, let's say joy, more of like a state of being, was starting to fall within multisport?
Honestly, it's just kind of something that happened a little bit over time. It wasn't necessarily, there was one point that was, boom, that's unhappiness. I was traveling the world, really having a great time with it. I love training. I love pursuing excellence in sport. But with triathlon, the way that I was doing that and to get to the point that I felt that I wanted to be, and I wanted to be one of the best in the world, I was training 30, 35 hours a week. And to cope with that, I did nothing else. All I did was I would train, I would come back to the house, I would eat, and I would take a nap, and then I'd go back out and train again. So really, I did almost nothing but exercise. So there was a bit of a fulfillment thing that was lacking. And I think the fulfillment is really where the unhappiness started coming through. I love training and I love triathlon. I loved running. I loved all of that. But the fulfillment factor of it was I didn't find fulfillment because I didn't have anything else in my life. I couldn't pursue my relationships. I couldn't see my family that often. My first year as a triathlete, I spent 2 weeks at home. And that's awful. I thank my parents for being so supportive with that. But I I think I would have said something if it was my kids doing that.
And what have you found since hitting the trails?
So I still train a lot. I'll preface it with that. But I am not able to put up with the running as much hours and everything. So I have more time. But one of the benefits of coming over to trails is that I came over with my wife. So we are traveling together. We are doing this sport together. We are pursuing excellence in sport together. So it kind of brings that factor of relationships back and family back into sport for me. Because family was part of my sport for so long. Like you said, my mom started a triathlon team when I was 7, and she was a swim coach longer than I've been alive. So it was always something my family did together. And I think it was the being apart that was such a big problem for me. So having Tabor there with me at all times has really brought in that fulfillment. And I have extra time now. I can pursue my coaching as well. And just all those other things that come into having a real life, not having just sport.
Now, do you still follow it at all? Do you still follow, like, because I think you were like, I think you were with like Morgan and Matt McElroy and those and that crew. Do you still follow it at all? Or are you kind of detached from it and sort of like, I'm that chapter's closed. I'm done.
I followed it a little bit, but I did take a step away I need a breather. Mm-hmm. I will absolutely come back and watch, because I am a fan of the sport. I do love the sport, but I just needed a bit of a breather. So I think pretty soon here, I'll be able to start watching and enjoying that again. So most of what I know from the sport is just, I do have a lot of great friends that are still competing, still racing. So what I know is what I know from them.
Mm-hmm. And does it excite you? You know, there's so much change in we'll move on to ultra running, but it gives a good frame of what was such a big part of a section of your life, which is allowing you sort of to do, not allowing you, but it's part of why you're able to excel so instantly in the sport of trail running. You've got this big aerobic base, but do you follow like the super tri now? And then there's like the 100K distance with all this money and the PTO, and then Ironman comes up with a series. Like, is this like, oh, I wish, like, oh man, there's so much happening in this sport. I guess that goes back to your question. If you're aware of that stuff.
Yeah, no, I definitely follow the sport enough to know that. I do still, I am kind of a nerd when it comes to training, and I do believe that triathletes have, a pretty high level of training. And it is something that I will always go back to of, okay, what are the top triathletes doing right now? If I want to bring that over to trails, and if I want to do this, say even with my coaching, like, what are triathletes doing? What are, I look at a lot of sports, but triathlon is definitely one of them because that's where my background is.
I'm thinking about ITU racing, like, it is hot off the gun. Like, even before the gun goes off, they've got that stress music that they play, you know? So you're already like, adrenaline is pumping, heart rate's high. How did you find there was an obstacle with trail running where you had to hold yourself back a little bit? Or did you find that you were going, like, it was so embedded in you to go hot from the start?
Well, first off, I still have PTSD from that heartbeat music. I still, to this day, if you play the thump thump heart music, yeah, I still get nervous. It's still ingrained in there. No, I would say that is absolutely true. I want to just go out from the gun and hammer immediately. So it is something that I do have to kind of take a step back. Like, okay, in these races that I've done just recently, it's like, okay, I'm going to be out there for 4 hours. I got to cool it a little bit. So yes, absolutely.
And also, when I think about the bike skills, right? Draft legal racing, you guys are going full on, like full send in a pack. Skills, like a lot of skill, a lot of agility. And I know you said you had to learn how to trail run, but did anything kind of translate over with that technicality and your agility? Did you find that there was a little bit of overlap?
Yeah, I definitely think there was overlap. I would say even just like the vision of actually going fast. I think one of the biggest things about running quickly on technical terrain is being able to watch the trail and absorb all that's coming in. as it's coming at you. And the faster you can absorb what's coming in, the faster you can run down that hill. It's rarely that you're out of speed. It's that there's big rocks in your way. So I think like traveling so fast in a bike pack, you learn how to take whatever's up there really fast, put it in the head and adjust for what's happening.
Yeah. And I think in that moment, you have to be confident and comfortable, right? Because so many people, I've heard this, like I can never ride in a pack because you just don't know what that front wheel is going to do. But for a lot of times that doesn't even enter your brain because it's just what you practice. So the same thing would be for trail running in the rocks. I feel the more that a person crosses over into that environment of trail running and they do the run, they do the downhill running, they put themselves in that environment, they're going to meet and greet opportunities that are going to train them to be awake to those moments.
Absolutely. I full 100% agree with that. It's the processing of information that just it, you learn how to do it over time. And it's not something that is just innate, especially in me. Like I don't get that, but like, I think the riding in a bike pack, doing mountain biking, all that stuff, it was super beneficial to my trail running career. I think that slightly lessened the steep, training curve that I came over to.
But where were your opportunities? Like you said, you're learning now, like something's clicking. You've taken on some additional skills. Where did you see that opportunity, you know, as you started into trail running where you needed to learn how to be a better trail runner?
Yeah. So one of my biggest things, coming into trails, and deciding that I was going to do another sport is I do always want to perform at my best abilities. And I think kind of the way that I did that with trails is me and my wife signed up for the most competitive races we could find. We signed up for these just absolutely crazy races that the best in the world are signing up for, just so that we could get our teeth kicked in and watch what the others are doing. And I think that was the best way to learn for me is I figured out what the best in the world are doing, how well they're doing it. Like I've watched people fly away from me on technical terrain so many times that I kind of knew where that bar was. Because if you don't know where the bar is, it's hard to reach for the bar. Whereas like, say you're running a marathon and you want to run a 220 marathon. Okay, get really good at running 520 pace. Like it's not overly complicated. Whereas trails, there's so many different little variables that go into it that I didn't even know where to start. So my starting period was get into the most competitive races and see what the best in the world are doing.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just laughing at that. I love that. It's you like want to be the best of the world. You need to be racing them.
What's with burn the boat? Get an island and burn the boat. Like you can't get off the island. You're in it. You're immersed in it. There's no way out. Is there anything that you realized when you went from triathlon to trail running that you already had? You're like, oh yeah, okay. I know, like, this is what I'm good at. I understand this already. I don't need to dwell on this. Was there anything that crossed over?
Overall, I think I was pretty fast at the time. I actually let my running ability go a little ways away. I'm not saying like I didn't work on trying to run quickly, but it was something that I put on the back burner so that I could focus purely on learning how to run on the skill side of things. Like I kind of said at the beginning, now I'm trying to bring in where I have a certain level of skill. I'm definitely not the best, most skilled athlete yet. But now I'm trying to say, okay, I'm with the pack with skills. So I'm going to try to come back and where I was one of the faster guys, and I'm not anymore. I want to be that faster guy again with the skill level.
You went over to Europe. Was the Mont Blanc marathon, was that your first international race or no?
No. So we did, me and my wife signed up for Sears and All as our first international race. Yes.
And anything that you took away from the European racing or the racing in the States?
I think Sears and All, like now I've been back again and I still can't figure out that race, but it is just the depth that Europe has in the sub ultra scene is phenomenal. it goes from, say, if I'm in the US, they have the stars there and you can race with the stars, but they don't have the next places. They don't have the, like, it's just condensed. Europe is condensed. Everyone is very, very good. It's not, there's a few good athletes and then it kind of trickles down slowly. It's everyone's really good.
Probably because of their terrain. You know, they're growing up on this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about your coaching. And let's start with just your coaching philosophy. Like if you were to say, hey, this is my philosophy, what would that be?
It's really tough. So I try to coach myself different than I coach other people. Cause I do think that, the way that, we coach ourselves is a bit excessive at times. Cause me and Tabor are currently coaching each other, ourselves, each other. But I do think that individuality kind of is everything. So usually when I am working with a new athlete, it takes weeks and time to figure out what is going on with an individual athlete. And I will never write the same program for one person or another, because somebody always needs different things and you always adapt differently to things. So I'll never say you can do two workouts a week in a long run, or you can do one workout a week in a long run, or blah, blah, blah. It's see how you adapt to those things. And so usually the first few months of training is we learn each other, and you learn, the athlete learns from my coaching and I learn from the athlete of how they're adapting to things. So you'll, like, my first month of coaching is an experiment.
But you have to have that discovery process. You know, we're not a template. We're not in a system. We're unique individuals. And the way that you get to ultra running and success is different from Heather Jackson getting to the top of her game. It's completely different. But it takes time, it takes an investment. So you must truly love coaching. You must love to work with people, speak with people, and get to understand their opportunities.
Absolutely. Again, it goes back to my fulfillment thing. I actually get to speak with and work with so many different athletes that I feel like I'm helping others instead of such a what felt like a very selfish endeavor. I feel like I'm actually being a part of people's lives, and I actually get to help where I didn't before.
Yeah, we're coaches too. And I feel like, and I coach myself, but I feel like the stuff that I do for myself, I'm actually investing in the business of coaching, because it's things that I'm practicing, testing out, and then giving to the athletes based on who could really gravitate from it, or who would be challenged by it. And then things that, like, I thought I would give an athlete, probably not ideal, because that's just for me. Do you find that too as well? Like, you're the self-experiment?
Absolutely. Tabor and I are the first ones to jump on a little fad and be like, okay, what if we change everything this way? Which is a little bit why I kind of say that I'm uncoachable, is I run with these, like, ideas that go maybe a little bit too far. And I think sometimes they really work and sometimes they don't. But it is like a trial and error process, especially with trail running. Because again, we don't know what the demands of competition necessarily are at every race. So we work as best we can towards that.
And how detailed do you get, even with your racing, Eli, like, how detailed do you get in the course, the actual specificity of the course itself, like the elevation, where the mountains are, where the downhills are? Do you get into that yet? Or is it really just a go from the start and we're going to see how this plays out, or a little bit of both?
I think specificity is very important. So kind of my idea of training is to be working on a pretty huge kind of broad spectrum of training all throughout the winter. And then as training or racing season comes along, you train towards that next race. Whereas so, like, in years past, I've kind of been doing a little bit all systems all the time. I kind of try to focus a little bit more And I try to build my season towards a couple single goals, multiple goals, where it's something that builds on individual races. I use races as training. Like I was learning during these last two races, is I was practicing my nutrition. I was doing all this. I do have races that I'm building towards. And so I'm using these to learn, kind of the hard way, but learn, how I handle, like, say, trying to bring on so many carbs an hour. And I did learn a lot these last 2 weeks with that. but yeah, I try to build seasons, so that my, specificity can grow on itself. But I can say, like, next up, I'm doing a fast race. I'm doing Canyons 50K. So I'm going to do quite a bit of quick work, which I kind of was doing a little bit of that, but that's purely because there's so much snow around where I live that my workouts are on a treadmill. and then after that, I get to start training with some hills and some more stuff, because I get to go race, do races like Broken Arrow or Eiger, and OCC ultimately is like kind of the A goal there. Sorry, that was a lot of rambling.
No, that's good insight.
Great information. Yeah. So Black Canyon, let's just talk about Black Canyon specifically. So you have goals. You said you have goals for the race. And although, you know, winning's amazing, right? We always want to win. Do you also feel like, did you hit your goals in Black Canyon?
Yeah, I would say Black Canyon actually was one of my better races, through my little goals that I have in the race. Obviously, winning and course record, super awesome. But like, I was trying to bring in my biggest thing was I was trying to run hard the whole time, so that I could practice fueling while running hard the whole time. There's very few times in a year that I'm running hard for 4 hours straight. Trying to bring in 100 grams of carb an hour while doing hard running for 4 hours, I wanted to see how my body handled that. And honestly, it did surprisingly well. So I get to kind of play with more or less, see how that goes now.
So with hitting that nutrition goal and being able to absorb that and run really fast, now you've got 2 weeks in between 60K and 50K, both of courses that you torched. Did that hitting that nutrition goal actually aid in your ability to recover?
Absolutely. I think the number one way to make sure you feel terrible after a race is to not fuel.
Yeah, that's so true. Why do we do that? You're a coach. Like, why do we just not starve ourselves, but why don't we fuel enough? Because it is, you know, why don't we do it if we know that it's working?
I just get in the moment and other things go out the window. I tend to have a rather spacey brain. So a lot of times it just gets like, say my first 50K, I was running, with two awesome guys, and we were just chatting, and turns out a way to make sure Eli doesn't, fuel properly is to chat. So I got 17 miles in and was like, oh, I forgot to fuel. That's a long ways without fueling. And so I was leading my first 50K with minutes, and then all of a sudden a marathon hits and I'm walking. Oof. And so, learning experience. I think one of the biggest things is just kind of being on top of that is being for personally, of course, my number one reason is because I get sidetracked and I don't even think about it. So I make ways of making sure I think about it. So in Black Canyon, I was carrying two 500 ml bottles, and I don't like carrying things when I run. So I was making sure I was drinking it so that I could stop carrying it.
Ah. Like in your hands?
Yes.
Oh yeah. That's one thing that really I struggle with is like the packet I've gotten used to, but like the hands, but I guess that serves its purpose.
Yeah, no, and that was kind of the goal with that is just I didn't want to do that, but I know myself, and I like at this Big Alta this last weekend, I had a super concentrated bottle with like 800 calories in the 250 ml bottle in my belt. But it was in my belt that it was out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. So I did much worse at fueling this last weekend.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So did you hit your, again, crushed it, big win, awesome, love it. Did you hit your goals as well? Sounds like nutrition maybe. it's so funny, right? Like two weeks in between and you hit the nutrition at Black Canyon and then nutrition's a bit of a fail 2 weeks later. It's like we can't get lazy at all with this stuff. But did you hit your goals at Big Alta?
I would say less so. I did show up to Big Alta knowing that I was more interested in the race. It was a very deep field and I was racing guys that I've always wanted to race. So it was one of those things like I kind of let it go a little bit on the wayside of like, okay, I'm okay with that, but I'm really happy to be racing with these guys and racing at a high level there. But yes, nutrition was not the most ideal. The way I concentrated my gel, it turned into a gel. It didn't flow very well through my bottle either. So I was having to like kind of suck it out of my bottle. And that was it was a tough thing. But lessons learned. And it was one of those things that was a trial. I was trying fueling one way for Black Canyon and trying fueling one way for Big Alta. And didn't work out that well at Big Alta. And so now I know that it does work a little bit better for me to focus more on liquid nutrition than at least the cap that I was using was not, it didn't have a high enough flow rate.
Yeah. You're trying to breathe, but you're trying to suck the stuff out. Like it's that contradictory. So just as a framework, like what are you shooting for calories for you personally, someone of your frame, some of your performance, like what are you shooting for calories per hour? And then what's your jam? Like what are you using, for nutrition? If you don't mind sharing.
So yeah, of course. I usually aim for about 100 grams an hour, which is quite a bit, but, I think that's kind of like a happy spot of at the level that I'm running these races, these 50Ks, they're still a very high exertion level. Like I'm running hard the entire time. There's no easy running. I think if I was running like maybe 100K, maybe I'd go down to say 90 grams an hour just to make sure that I don't get that GI distress. But I've been trying for, 100 grams an hour, roughly. It kind of works out a little bit funny out 1 hour, I'll take 110, another take, I'll take 90. But then I've been kind of jamming with Blank's Sport Nutrition. It's a new company that my buddy started. He's a triathlete. His name's Mike Arashita. He started this company kind of as like a, a little bit of a show it to the man of Morton. He says that Morton's a marketing company. but he is selling kilo bags full of 2-to-1 glucose to fructose. Pretty much the same as Morton, but he's selling it for $20 a kilo versus where Morton, if you put it up to a kilo, it's like $60-some. Mm. So I've been loving his stuff also because he puts these delicious flavors in there. The blue raspberry tastes exactly like a snow cone. And then always a go-to is always Scratch Superfuel as well.
Okay, good to know. Well, we'll put a link to your buddy's info in there in our show notes.
Well, is he selling it to the public, or is it just for Eli?
Is it just for you?
Just your secret?
No. This is everyone. So it's Blank's Sport Nutrition. It's supposed to be like your own sports nutrition. So his idea going forward is that say it's Jess's Sport Nutrition, and you can take. You need a certain amount of sodium. So you can ask, say, I want per serving 800 milligrams of sodium. You can do that with his, or hopefully with his company, it's going forward, like you can do that. So it's kind of that personalization thing that goes towards it too, which is pretty fun.
In digestion and osmolality was fine. You felt no stomach distress and you pretty good.
I was pretty great that whole time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think nutrition is so specific to people. But I think the I think the key is, number one, follow what you're doing. Like, go have experiences at races where you're actually going at the intensity you'll race at to see if this fueling is going to be possible or not. I think a lot of times we have this fantasy that we can take in all these calories, we can have peanut butter sandwiches, Subway subs. We've seen this at Ironman, and that you're going to be able to perform really fast with that in your gut, and you're not. You're not. You got to practice with this stuff. I love that you race to practice. Like, you do these races for practice, where a lot, I think a lot of people would be hesitant. Like, they put a lot of stock, I guess, in racing. Like, and I know you do too, but we do hard workouts, and then hopefully that will mimic what we do in races. But yeah, I heard you talking on another episode, another podcast, that you guys are going after races, like signing up left and right to get out there. What does the calendar look like? How many races so far do you have planned out, or like, what are you looking for?
So this year, is our goal is to be smart with racing.
Oh, okay.
That is number one goal, because last year we did a few back-to-back races that the body did not thank us for. Honestly, I am surprised how well they went. They went quite well. So we did a combination of like Broken Arrow straight to Marathon du Mont Blanc, just a week apart, different continents, different racing styles, everything, and went surprisingly well. And then we did a 50K straight into the Golden Trail Series World Final. And it worked out for me. Tabor had a tough day at the final, but that was a little bit more injury-wise than fitness-wise. But this season, yes, we're being smarter. That double that I just did was my only real double. but when Free Trail's putting on a race in Marin County, it's really hard to say no. I'll do Canyons, Broken Arrow, Eiger 50K. And OCC is my plan so far. And then after that, kind of keeping a little unknown. Might try something a little bit bigger, might not. We're waiting to see how the whole season goes.
Nice. So there's that, there's a little bit of that desire to, like, you're not holding at 50K, 60K. Like, there's that desire to go longer.
There is. It's definitely one of those things that I would love to see just how my body reacts in those things, in those different races, those longer races. My introduction into trail running was my high school cross country coach used to run Leadville every year. And so he would bring his varsity team to pace Leadville. So one of my goal races eventually down the road, far, far down the road, is Leadville 100.
Oh, nice. So you've run some of it when you were in high school?
Yep. When I was in high school, I've run over Hope Pass and I've run the last 20 miles.
Nice. Whoa. Okay. That's definitely in your future for sure.
Yep, for sure.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Golden Trail Series? It sounds like this is, and I don't know much about it, and maybe our listeners don't know much about it either, but it sounds like a great series. There's championship, and is it, who's behind it?
Behind it, you have, Gregory Vollet. He worked for Salomon. Now he's kind of focusing just on the series itself. But loves, sub ultra racing, and sub ultra being that fit, marathon racing and down. He wants to kind of make the most competitive races in the world. So he is, getting all these different people and traveling them all over the world. So this year they even have races in Asia, which is super awesome. They always have races in Europe. They have two races in the US. So they're bringing everything, and then it accumulates in a final. So you score points all throughout the year, and then it qualifies you for the final. And then the final, you kind of go for the big bucks and race. I don't even know if they've announced where their final is this year yet, but it's always some big hurrah at the end of the year.
Yeah, I was I have it written down here that it has a total prize purse of $315,000. And this is all, these races are sub ultra.
Yes, all of them are sub ultra.
Is this kind of the first big push to like bring Subultra to like the, you know, to an elite field?
Yeah. So honestly, over in Europe, Subultra is already a pretty huge thing. So like races like Sierre Zinal and Marathon du Mont Blanc, those are just famous races and they're huge. I would say it's over in the US that they are really still kind of growing. So races like Broken Arrow, they're doing such a great job of bringing Subultra into the scene.
And Subultra is on trails, right? Just not a 10K on the road. This is all trail stuff.
Yeah, this is all trails. Yes, Golden Trail World Series.
Yeah, good. You mentioned Salomon. So you now have a sponsor, yes?
Yes, I've I was sponsored by Salomon for a single year. And then me and my wife just signed with Adidas, Adidas Terex.
I saw that, yeah, because I had seen that you were with Salomon, but I thought maybe there was a switch there. So, yeah, how's that being a part of Adidas?
It's amazing. It is just such a great team environment, and somewhere that we think we can learn the most. And kind of back to how I treat everything is it all goes back to a little bit of happiness of where you are and where, what makes you happy. And we saw that Adidas was a place that we're like, wow, that's kind of our space. And so we talked with them and kind of worked out perfectly. We have such an amazing team now. In just a couple of weeks, we're headed to a team camp and actually get to meet everyone on the team. And so we're so excited about that.
How attractive is it that it's you and your wife that are a team, you know, power couple going into these races and getting sponsorship and doing things together? How important is that? Cause we do a lot together. We race and it changes the dynamic, I think, not only between us, but in what people see in us and people want to be a part of it. Do you feel that as well?
Yeah, well, that is kind of one of our number one thing. We came to trail running as a couple, and we came to do it together. So everything that we do is to be together. So when we're talking with companies, it's like, okay, well, you can't have one of us. Like we would much rather not be sponsored than be separated. It's one of those things that we are a joint entity when it comes to the trail running scene, and that's where we want to be.
How has training and racing together benefited you guys as a couple?
Honestly, we just spend so much time together. It's amazing. We do all of our training together. Our workouts are separate because we are very different athletes. Everything that we need to do, like for training specificity, it's kind of opposite. She's a real fast former track athlete, and I'm the triathlete coming in with all the aerobic capacities you want. Everything that we do is together, but then when the workouts come out, we warm up together, and then we're like, okay, I'll meet you back here in an hour, and then we do our cool down together.
How has it challenged you as a husband?
Honestly, it hasn't challenged me that much. It's one of those things that with us just trying to pursue happiness, this is what we wanted. And it's something that we both have a serious goal towards of we want to be some of the best in the world. And we're both just saying, okay, how do I help you be the best in the world? And she's saying, how do I help you be the best in the world? So I think we've kind of really just kept that idea going forward. And it's just, how can we make it the best for the other person? And there's some give and take a little bit there, but I mean, mostly it's just all green lights.
Nice. Yeah, I get that. It can be. What? It can be. You know, as long as communication is clear and open and willing to have it be sometimes awkward, it can be. It can be green lights. It can be that way. That's beautiful. I'm so happy to hear that about the two of you.
Happiness. This may be a difficult question, but what is it? Like, what? Can you give a definition for your personal experience with it? Like, what is it? What does happiness feel like?
What does happiness feel like? I've used the word fulfillment too many times in this podcast already. I don't know. It's finding pursuing things that you are. I don't know. That's a tough question.
Yeah,
that is a really tough question. I find happiness in the pursuit of a pursuit of something bigger than yourself, and that is something that me and my wife are both doing. And we find that in the trails, in the community there. I know that's not a definition, but purely what we're finding in it. I don't know if I can give you a straight up definition besides whatever I'm doing right now.
That's enough. Why can't that be enough, right? Like, why can't what we do right now, why can't everything that we are doing in our life and fulfilling right now, why can't that be happiness and joy? It doesn't have to be some corporate job or some car that you obtain. It's just, can right now be enough? And I think this is the power of what we do as athletes. Like, we have that ability. We have that ability to come pull ourselves, beam ourselves into the moment. And if we can have that awareness and appreciation for that moment, then we're always going to be happy. Yeah.
No, I totally agree with that. And I do think, especially like I find it in athletics, the pursuit of something and the hopeful expectation is something that also brings me happiness. It's you're training. Sometimes it's not always the most pleasant, but you are, you have that hopeful expectation of this is making me this much better. And I think that's huge.
What's, shifting gears to your training a little bit, like what's one workout that you can share with us that has been profound in the trail running environment versus like, you know, 10 times 1K repeats for triathlon? Like, what is it about the trail? Is it just a massive day? Is it hill climb? Is it being into the unknown? What's one workout that you've really gravitated to?
So it kind of goes back to a little bit of my coaching is I don't believe there's one workout, and it's all accumulation. I don't think that one thing is going to make you so much better. I think that it all is just day after day being out there, enjoying the process, working hard, running hard sometimes, running easy most of the time. It's one of those things that you find that's what makes you the athlete that you want to be. Specifically to trail, I just think spending time on it was the biggest thing for me. And it's one of those places that make me the happiest is being out in the mountains, just me and Tabor, no one in sight besides us. I think there's something special about just the solidarity of that. And I'm not saying that the solidarity is what makes you the athlete, but it's what makes me happy. And I think that's what makes me the best trail athlete.
Trail, you're in nature, right? When we're road racing or we're doing triathlon, typically, and especially ITU, you know, your technical city streets, a lot of times, things like that. What, if anything, has your observation of nature and your time in nature taught you?
I am definitely much more aware of what's happening with the environment right now. In a hotel room, just being in cities all the time, you might not notice, but now that we're spending so much time outside, it's like, wow, like it isn't snowing as much as it usually does this year. Like, what's going on? Or wow, fire season was really bad this last year. Like, I couldn't run outside for however long. I think it's one of those things, like it appreciation of what the environment's doing, good and bad, is really like opening our eyes, for Tabor and I both.
Yeah. Those are, Kremlin's, you know, out in, you know, there's not much around there. And that may be temporary, you know, I'm sure as like many places in the world, especially when we lived in Boulder to Denver, there was no really connection there. And now there's basically,
there's a bike path the whole way now.
do you have a true appreciation for that surrounding that you're in right now? Well, I guess you do because you moved up there full time. Is that recent that you guys have been up there?
So we've been up here about a little over a year and a half now.
And loving it?
Absolutely loving it. It is so amazing. Kind of going back to that solidarity thing, I think there's something that's so special in being on a mountain alone, being on just a big open field by yourself. I think there's nothing that quite makes you feel so small as like being on top of a mountain and like not seeing anyone, no signs of cars, no signs of buildings, just you and nature.
Mm. Is there gravel riding up there? I would assume there is. Yeah.
There is.
Or are you going to make your own?
No, there is only gravel riding here. There is one paved road through the town, and that is the highway. So we do not ride our bikes on the highway.
So we are big fans of spending time by yourself. You know, we typically wrap it in for our athletes into, you know, morning breath work practice or, you know, doing those things if they're a little skittish about being on the trail alone to, you know, work with them on being out there or, you know, running at night or something like that and working through those kind of anxieties. And I guess this, I'm kind of going, I can go two different ways with this, but I'm going to come back to something that was on my mind earlier for you is, you know, you talked a little bit about the PTSD from the heartbeat song at the beginning of those triathlons many years ago, but do you still have, like, how do you work through nerves or do you, you know, you're human, right? So I'm assuming you've got some moments where you're like, oh God, I hope this works out. Or, how do you work through things like that?
So honestly, like when it comes to nerves and sport, I think the biggest thing for me is remembering it is just sport. And it is just that I am out here running with a ton of people, having a great time. The worst that can happen is I end up walking and I probably will find somebody to walk with, and I can enjoy my time there. I don't think too much pressure should be put into any individual race. I think it's all about being out there in the community, and just having fun. Like it's sport is just such a fun thing that you don't need to necessarily put all that pressure on. Like, yes, we want to do well, we want to perform at our best. But that is secondary to why we're doing it.
Okay. And then I'll follow that up with the other part, which is where I was originally going to go, is this idea of spending time alone. And, you know, I know you and Tabor train together, you know, you split off for your workouts and things, but you had just talked about like being on the top of a mountain and like you can't see anybody around. What is a benefit or a learning that you've taken away for this, you know, that's like pro spending some time by yourself? Because a lot of people, and I used to be there too, and so I have a lot of compassion for it, is this like, you know, kind of running from yourself. But when you go in that opposite direction and you run to yourself, when you spend time alone, I'm curious as to, you know, what you've learned or taken away or why you feel that's important.
Yeah. I think introspection is, the goal there, right? Like you do get to spend so much time with yourself thinking through, just every little thing in your life, say like, do I want to live in the mountains or do I, when me and Tabor were moving up to Boulder, we spent so much time not talking to each other. We were just running together and we were thinking, and then we'd get done to the end of a run and say, well, what did you think about today? and it's what I think just spending time in a quiet space is such a great place to learn about yourself. I don't know, if I can come out with many profound things about what I've learned about myself, other than I pursued happiness now. And I think that's why I've changed my sport, changed my sponsor, changed all of this about my life, changed where I live. Everything is just in that goal. And I am no longer afraid of just being like, okay, I'm going to put everything on its head and I'm going to go this way now. And I think that's what I've learned about myself.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah. not many people do that. I think more people stay in line with what's comfortable. They stay in the comfort zone. And I think, you know, I see it as a coach, but I also see it in myself in my previous years of wanting to be safe and wanting to follow the path and not be judged and, you know, do the thing that everybody expects of me. But it takes bravery and courage. It really does, to be on the outside of things. And I'm sure you probably had some of that when you walked away from the sport at some time, probably not from your family. Sounds like your family is so loving and supportive right from the beginning. But I'm sure there were things outside that were like, oh, what are you doing? Like you've put all this work in there and then you're walking away. But that's the stuff that we grow from. That's the stuff that frees us. Back to what Jess was talking about, like frees our minds, frees our belief system that really anything is possible. Anything that we want to do that we are in touch with that makes us happy, we must pursue that. So my question, I guess, would be like, do you have some sense of relief that that all signs are pointing like you're on the right path, you're on the correct path?
Yeah. You know, I would say that in triathlon, there was a lot of times where I did feel like I was pounding on a locked door. I really did, and I enjoyed my time, but there was a lot of things that were just, everything was a little bit too difficult. And Tabor and I have had this conversation so many times that things just seem to be falling into place so well, so easily, so fluidly, since we've been making these big moves. And I think that's a sign of that we are doing the right thing.
Yeah, that is. Keep going. I mean,
yeah, don't stop. Like,
life is challenging, you know. But if you can do what feels most aligned, and you know, it's not by luck, like you chose it and you took risk to do it. But like when you can do what you love or you feel that fulfillment in your life, it makes those challenges of life worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with that.
Beautiful. Eli, thank you. This has been an awesome conversation. I really appreciate it. And if you and Tabor are up for it, maybe sometime we'll have you both on. There's just too many amazing couples like you guys out there crushing it. And sounds like it could be a fun conversation for the four of us.
Yes, I would love that. She's the better communicator of the relationship.
Well, you were fantastic. So we'll just hand the mic over to her.
Before we go, where can people, what's your coaching business? Where can they follow you guys like through this amazing future you guys have paved the way for?
So, I mean, the easiest place to follow us, we are trying to start a YouTube channel just called The Hemmings. We are trying to be regular about posting. It's a lot of work, but it's pretty fun. And we are terrible in front of a camera. No idea what we're doing, but we're having a great time. And then our coaching business, it's called Aerobic Monsters, but you can just find us through the -Hemmings.com.
We'll put a link in the show notes. And people can find you. So yeah, thanks again, Eli. It was really great to connect with you, and we've loved watching your career, and I have a feeling we're going to love watching your future even more now that you're, you know, on this path of happiness. So we'll be following and rooting for you and watching you play it smart this year. We'll see what happens.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. It was really fun.